Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. In this episode of Swords and Mental Health, I invite Jana on the show to talk about her tournament experience at Combat Con 2022, following our discussions in the episode The Toll of Tournament. There is also a special announcement 1 hour into the podcast. The episode was recorded 27 July 2022.
You went to Combat Con last week.
Yes, I did.
And you met folks there. Who did you meet?
I met a ton of people. Let me think about all of the people I met. I met Roberto from Mexico. Mm. I met Chuck Gross from Philadelphia. Mm. And who else did I meet? God, there's so many. Let's see. I met Noah Hansen.
Oh yeah, cool.
From MKDF. We had a really fun small sword sparring free fencing match. Mm-hmm. I met some new people from other clubs that were in my pool, and we just had a really good exchange, and we kind of just bonded over like little things about our similarities in height and or and I actually met Damon.
Awesome.
I took one of his class, the Egyptian martial arts class with the spear and the shield. Yeah, it was insane. Like, I gave up during warm-ups.
But
it was intense, but that was really fun. What else? I took Roberto's Talhofer footwork class, which I love so much. And then I met a bunch of folks that I've been talking to online, and people who I guess have listened to our podcast and loved it and mm-hmm. wanted to chat with me about it and how the message from, you know, multiple episodes have resonated with them and the people in the club, and how some of the topics that we've discussed have actually opened up certain conversations within people in their club. So it's been a really great experience overall.
Oh, lots of good feedback. So you met old friends, made new friends, and got feedback about the podcast.
That's true. I saw a lot of HEMA butts too. You know how be, girl.
The whole bakery.
It was a whole bakery this year. It was a good harvest. Your girl got a good harvest this year.
So you mentioned that people were coming back to you, sort of engaging with you about this podcast that we have produced between us, I guess, for just over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, it's relevant to the fact that you went to an event, the episode we recorded with our friend Kimmy, which was The Toll of Tournament. That seemed to touch a lot of, hit a lot of people, sort of resonated. So what sort of things do people say about that episode?
I was really surprised that people remember that one the most. Before we started recording, I told you that is the one that people and recently. So when I had con, two people specifically mentioned that episode, and they both told me that it started conversations about, you know, how they do things in their club and what you know, things that they can do because of the things that we have spoken about and discussed during that episode. So it's been really nice to go to these events and meet new people who, you know, have listened and resonated with the things that I've said and you've said. And just because I, like, honestly, I didn't think that people would care what I said about, because I got pretty emotional in that episode because it was slightly traumatic. No, it wasn't just slightly traumatic. It was pretty traumatic for me. It was a no holds bar for me kind of thing. Like, I was just like, I'm going to tell y'all how I felt. And surprisingly enough, it made a lot of people think, especially the instructors. You know, people who have students going out into tournaments for the first time. And, you know, it got them to thinking, like, what else can we do aside from preparing them physically when they first go into the ring to fight for the first time? So it's been really nice to hear all of that really positive feedback.
It's good to know that we are influencers in that sense, that you know, in a positive way. Oh, I just got a cookie by my kid. So, you know, the through our conversations, people are feeling more comfortable about having their own conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're saying was, like, as an instructor myself, the stuff that we talked about, particularly stuff that Kimmy mentioned, it's like, what are you doing as a club, as an instructor, to prepare your students for tournament? Because up until that conversation, it has essentially just been, just go there and bring back prizes kind of thing, you know?
Yeah,
go there
exactly.
And win stuff. We'll train hard and win. But mm-hmm. you know, that's preparing people physically. How are we preparing them mentally?
Exactly.
So yeah. It's like, you know, the episode was called The Toll of Tournament. You know, it's as in the price of tournament, like, what, you know, winning shiny medals and going to events always has a price, whether that's emotionally, physically, financially, you have to pay to go there, you know. And I think on a personal level, how it's affected me is, you know, I've been doing it for many years now, and I've I have burnt out from tournament in a positive way, I'd say. I don't despise tournament, I'm just done with it. I'm closing the door, but that doesn't mean that I'm not responsible for my students. I know in some clubs, like, the instructors aren't tournament people. So they I don't know whether they're actively discouraging their students, but they don't necessarily encourage them to do it because it's not their thing. So, you know, it's like, cool, if you want to do that, that's fine. I can train with you and that's it. But, you know, I don't know what conversations go on behind those doors, but that episode made me really think, like, I may have shut the door on tournament for myself, but that doesn't mean just because I feel that way that my students also feel that way. In fact, I would be really upset if my students all suddenly decided that they didn't like tournament just because I said that. That would be alarming, I think. And to that end, in my school, the School of the Sword, we teach in 8-week blocks. So we do an 8-week module, then we have a free play day, and then another 8 weeks. So we were coming to the end of the last block, and me and a couple of the other senior instructors put our heads together and go, what are we going to do for the next block?
Yeah.
And Lynette Nussbacher, she said, why don't we have a tournament simulator? So we'll do tournament simulation for 8 weeks. And one of the sort of progressions in our school is, if you want to become an instructor, you have to do some instructing for a bit, sort of under supervision of someone else. So when you get to sort of like 200 hours of study, you then have the option to train for your next sort of grading, as it were, and we kind of encourage people to, it may not be instructing, but we ask people to kind of give back to the school, kind of like with your time, and, you know, whether it's instructing or helping out with the website or whatever, just in some capacity. And one of our guys, John, was voluntold to run this thing, but he's really good because he's done a lot of tournaments.
Yeah.
He's injured at the moment, but that doesn't stop him from being able to organise it. So we have a piste, we have the scoreboards, we have the tables, we have everything set up. We don't have the software, mm-hmm. but we've got, you know, we've got it all on paper, like old school. So we have. I would be there tonight watching it, but I'm here recording with you, because the result of that conversation was also that I don't have to teach this block, so I'm having a little rest.
Right.
To do what I want to do, which is HEMA, as you can see. So the tournament simulator that we're doing is basically week in, week out, people can come and fight in a tournament setting. So that mm-hmm. when the day comes, if they do ever decide to go to a tournament, it's not completely alien to them.
Yeah.
And they know, like, their homework was, here's the rules for the Wessex League, go and read it up. But when, I don't know about what your experience was, Jana, but when you went to Combat Con and SoCal, did anyone read the rules?
I don't think so. I don't, not, no, not everybody, because I thought I didn't.
Nope. I mean, I've organised a lot of events, and even as an organiser, I'm like, remind me what the rules are again. I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Even when I'm laughing, I've had to go to my colleagues. It's 3 points for this one, right?
Yeah. Oh,
no. And it's you know, nobody does that research.
Yeah.
So one of the sort of things to sort of help people out is get your head around the rule set, become familiar with it, so that when we do these little sessions in class, it makes sense. And you're not going, oh, what does that mean? What am I doing here? Because you think about how terrifying it can be being in a tournament with all eyes on you, and you feel like completely incompetent or whatever, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That is another factor that will just add to the anxiety, like not understanding what's going on, who to listen to, what all these things mean and stuff like that. So that's one thing. I mean, you could say it's just a physical prep, maybe, just to give people that experience, but I think it is a mental preparation as well.
I think so.
It should reduce any kind of tournament anxiety that someone might have about going to one of these events.
Yeah.
And the Wessex League, which I founded with a bunch of other people, when they run a tournament, they have an hour at the beginning with everybody and the tournament manager just practicing what the tournament looks like.
That's really awesome.
So that when, like, here's some scenarios and gives people a go at staffing in a sort of demo mode kind of thing, where there's no pressure, it's just for practice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, as an instructor, that has been on my mind. And I've had folks coming up to me saying, oh, I want to go to Fight Camp and do the tournaments. I want to go to Wessex League and do the tournaments. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, good for you, bro. I will support you as much as I can, but you know, I'm not into that. I'm into that about that life anymore. But I'm gonna support them in as much as I can on our home turf, like in our school, and tell them, you know, this is what to expect. And also tell them, like, you know, when in the past, what I've said to my students is kind of bit of a joke, but I hope people don't take it too seriously. It's like sit and come back with your shield or upon it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, go out there and win stuff. But I also want them to take home the message that, you know, I'm proud of you for doing this anyway, mm-hmm. whether you win or not. You're not there just to earn anyone's approval by winning everything. We know, like, everyone wants to just get out of the pools, you know, but getting addicted to shinies can be a problem. Once those cookies, as Kimmy called them, can be addictive. Sugar rush. So going back to you, Jana, how was your experience in the tournaments this time? Because you went to Combat Con before, didn't you, last time?
Yeah, I did.
Cutting, I think.
I did cutting, last year. I didn't do cutting this year, but I did enter the small sword and long sword, women's long sword tournaments. Mm-hmm. And so women's, I was also working the event. So I was just like super, when I'm not competing, I was just going around like filming and stuff because I was with the media staff this year.
Hmm.
And it was a different experience this year because I was a lot more frazzled, I guess. And I really had very minimal preparation for these for those two tournaments. I had stopped coming for about, like 2 months, and I haven't like I literally, aside from like the conditioning that I do at home and the drills here and there, my consistency has plummeted a lot before Combat Con. And the first time I sparred anyone was literally like the night before. And I felt it. Like, I felt the rust. Like, I felt like I've forgotten how to fight. I went to, so Friday was a women's deal, and again, like I wasn't expecting anything with little preparation and still fighting with my gear. I did manage to win one match, and I had a really low goal for Combat Con, and so winning a match was already like a win for me. I had to drop out of the tournament because during my last match, I took a really, really hard thrust to the face with the tip of someone's sword that has those big rubber tips, and those don't slide off. It just sticks to your mask. And
it's like a punch.
Yeah, that's literally how it felt like. And I think I got a whiplash from it because it landed on the side of my mask, and my neck like kind of snapped like sideways.
Yeah.
And then when my neck and
like this was type thing.
Yeah, and it was funny because Rob and I laughed about this later because before I went to the tournament, while we were warming up, Rob was showing me this this footwork that he does when he's fighting, and so I've been trying it, and it really grounds you and makes you super like solid and stable. That after that happened, he was like joking, like, Jana, this is my fault that you got hurt because your feet were so, he's like, your feet were so planted on the ground. It was only your head that moved. And it was so true. When we saw the video, looking back at the video, like it was just my head going like this and like snaps back like that. Everything else stayed in structure. So we were just like laughing about that later, but it was pretty scary when it happened, because when my head snapped back into place, I felt this sharp pain from ear to ear, like somebody like dragged a really hot knife across my jaw from ear to ear, and I started freaking out, and I got my bell rung. I was a little frazzled, and they called the medic, they checked me. And, you know, my corner was Sean Ellis, and he's just been the best the whole time. And Rob was there, too. So I was really thankful I had those two people. But, you know, Sean was there. I asked him to be, you know, my moral support. So he was like, Donna, you can do this. But I was getting to the point where I'm like, I remembered our conversations, right? You know. It's okay to push that eject button. And I did, and I don't regret it, because I did not want to push through that pain because it wasn't really worth it for me, because I was there to have a good time.
Yeah.
And so that was the boundary that I had, is that I did not want to leave battered again.
No.
Because I came home from SoCal sword fight a little bit beat up mentally and physically. And so I told myself I wasn't going to do that this time around. And I did. And I was happy with that decision. So I decided, and the pain lasted for a little bit. I don't think they would have waited for me. That match would have ended had I just sat there. So I just decided to just like, you know, I'm just going to drop out because it's not worth it. I don't know what it was. It could have been something, but the medic said it was a pinched nerve and some muscle inflammation or something. You know, I was okay the next day, but like it hurt for a few hours, like sharp pains. Like I tried to eat for the first time and this pain shot up on like in my jaws. Like it was like somebody stabbed my jaws when I started like chewing. So it was kind of scary. It was not fun. Like it was not fun. And I had to work after that. I did. And I was really happy about it. And you know, I had fun during the pools and I learned some things. I was trying some new things as well during my matches. So it was more of like a, you know, I haven't sparred in a long time. So like, this is like the moment, right? And I've had to like, I was able to fight new people as well and make new friends from that pool. There was this one moment and it was a lot less stressful because one of the things that I said I wasn't going to do that I did at SoCal was I was melting down in between my matches because I was so stressed out.
Yeah.
Albert from Blackfire in California pulled me aside and he showed me some ways to hold my sword with the clamshells that I have right now that made it a little bit more comfortable and won't break my structure and stuff. And it really did make a big difference when I fought. I still have to like work. He literally showed it to me like hours before, like everything that people
were having. I want to know.
Yeah. I'll definitely have to show. It really does work. And it's very simple.
Do a TikTok.
I will. Oh yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah. So it was a good experience. And then I just worked the whole, so Friday, was a women. I obviously did not get out of my pool. And then once the medic said, you know, there's nothing really wrong that I needed, you know, immediate medical attention, I kind of just chilled out and I went to work the tournament, which they threw me in the rapier and dagger as a line judge. And that was like the most like,
Girl,
let me tell you the story of that.
It's so hard like, to judge. Even as a like experienced judge, that's really difficult.
That's what I mean. And so I was like, I've never line judged before. And so I was like, can you just let me table at least? Like I don't know if I can do this. And they were like, I was replacing this guy, and he was like, you have more experience than this guy because you've done small sword at least. And I was like, you know what? Okay, fine.
This is that TikTok fame coming to bite you in the ass. Oh, I know.
I don't. And the first match that they put me in were two of the top rapier fencers.
Oh, shit.
Girl, they were so fast. I was just like, I'm sorry. I didn't see anything. Like, I don't know. I was just like looking at the director and I'm just like, And he was like, and he just kept watching the exchanges and they were getting mad. And we're like, what are we supposed to do? Like, we can't see what's going on. And so that, and my friends kept saying, no, it's okay. You're doing such a good job. It's just really intense to like be thrown in this. And I'm like, then, okay. And so anyway, yeah, it was rough. And then after that, I was like, I don't think I want to do this again. This is too much. Maybe I'll do master. Maybe I'll do longsword. But rapier was so intense.
I don't know what it's like in the States, but here in the UK, when we do rapier and dagger, you need more staff to run that than competitors because you need two line judges per competitor.
Yeah.
Plus the ref.
Yeah.
Plus the table staff, which is usually two.
Yeah.
So and there's usually more people that are in the pool running it. And it's just very labor intensive and it requires so much concentration and it's really hard to see what's going on. That's why you need so many eyes to corroborate.
Yeah. I definitely agree that they needed more than two people. And they were so low on volunteers. That they were just like putting, you know, anybody that has a little bit experience that could possibly run the tournaments. And so it was rough. At some point, they were so unhappy with our performance that they called the match to a halt. And they kicked me and the director out, and they had another guy replace both of us. And they were like, well, you got a self-call, because they weren't self-calling either. Mm. So, you know, we had to go, we sat that one out, and they finished that match by themselves. And I was like, if y'all don't need me, I'm going to take a break.
I think it's really important for people, whether they are experienced in tournament event attendees or not, to realize that everyone running the thing is a volunteer. It's yeah. not, I know you have to pay for a ticket to get into the thing, and you pay loads of money to get there.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people kind of, you know, you expect a certain degree of professionalism, whatever, mm-hmm. but everybody, all the staff are there as attendees as well. They're not there to serve you. They are
exactly.
but they're doing it, they're giving you their time, they're
exactly
volunteering their time for you
exactly, because
which is
yeah,
a dual-edged sword, because you know
mm-hmm.
they aren't, you know, professionals. If we had professional staff paid to be there, then that would be
yeah.
different, but
yeah,
we don't
it'll
have
be more
luxury,
it'll be more expensive.
Yeah,
because we weren't getting paid, and you know, you're right, like we were taking our time out of our own things.
Yeah,
to,
you missed
to
stuff
help
as a result.
So yeah, you really do.
So yeah, but I think if anyone's thinking about attending a tournament, also bear that in mind when you're on the piece, that the people working the table, working the piece, are giving you their time.
Yeah.
So, you know, be mindful of that, and don't expect everything to sort of just go your way because, you know, you're stressed out or whatever. We're all stressed out, and
yeah,
we're all, you know, sort of, lots of people are competing and volunteering, so it's, you know,
yeah,
double duty.
Exactly. Yeah, but it was a chaotic, eye-opening experience doing that. Like my friends were like, yeah, they started you in hard mode with judging. I was like, yes, it was.
Mega
so
hard
stressful.
Mode.
But you know, I crawled out of that in one piece at least. So, but yeah, it was a good experience. And then I spent, Saturday, I made sure that I had time to free spar with Noah. I didn't get a lot of free sparring time because I was working, and I've decided I'm probably not going to work as hard as I did this year because
Noah is a wheelchair fencer, is that right?
Yeah Wheelie Boy Wonder, I think is his name on Instagram.
He's a really good sabreur as well.
He is. I had to bully him during our sparring to win because he is so good. Like, he's so fast. I'll have to post our videos later. But so I got to fence Noah, which was super fun. I think that was the only like real free fencing that I did that weekend, not to count the ones where I fence Rob, but that for warm-up. But yeah, and then I just worked most of it, and then they had a little party Saturday night. And then, yeah, we took home 2 medals, our club. Ooh. So that was really cool.
Who was that, Kirsten and Justin?
No, it was Jordan Hinckley took bronze in the Tier 3 open longsword, and then Justin won silver. In open cutting, and he's been in the show, so yeah, he worked so hard. I knew he was gonna medal. I wasn't surprised that he medaled.
Yeah, I've been watching his cutting videos.
I know. I'm like, he really put in the work.
Yeah.
So I'm really proud of him. Same with Jordan. It was so funny because like Jordan and I were in Rob's class. It was Rob's footwork class that morning before his match, his finals match.
Roberto Martinez
Loyo. Yeah. And we were joking about how he's going to use Roberto's Talhofer footwork to win his match for bronze. And I was in the table because I was doing the live stream, and he won.
Yeah.
he wanted. And so we're just like laughing about it later on. And yeah, it was a good experience. It was so nice to see my friend's hard work just kind of pay off. And you know, and it's not just people in my club, like people like Jenna Johnson. I fought her at Sokol Sword Fight. She's the chicken lady. And
Chicken lady.
yeah, she has chickens, and she's just,
Okay.
yeah, she's so wholesome, and she's also a writer. And I fought her at Sokol Sword Fight last February, and she won bronze this year. And she was like, I talked to her, she's like, yeah, I haven't trained in 2 weeks, I tweaked my wrist, and she ended up medaling. So I was like, heck yeah, like I was just so happy. Yeah, so it was great. And then I had fun at the small sword tournament. I almost did not come. I almost dropped out of that one because I was super tired at that point. And I managed to do way better than I was expecting. So overall, it was a really good experience.
So compared to how you felt at the last event, so when we talked about how your experience at SoCal, and you said that you left that feeling quite, I guess you were kind of traumatized in a way, by all of the kind of stress that you experienced. So how did you feel after the event this time compared to the previous one?
I
Having
actually
had all
felt
the discussions that we've had in between.
I definitely felt a lot. I actually felt the opposite this time, because the remember when we recorded the Toll of Tournament episode, I skipped the small sword tournament that was happening in Northern California because I just felt burnt out, and I felt like I wasn't a good fencer. I just felt inadequate. Not really a bad fencer. I felt inadequate. I felt like I wasn't ready again. There was just so many of these like things I have in my head that just didn't make sense to anybody else but me. Like all of these expectations that I was just putting on myself. That I never really spoke about to anyone until now.
Maybe you weren't even aware of them until then.
I think so. I really think though, and I think I said this in the podcast last time, that I was worried about the way that people will perceive me. And I was talking to someone that weekend too, and I kept saying hi to this person. And they would just smile at me, and I'm like, I want to talk to this person. Like, what the hell? And then when I finally got, and I'm, you know, and this is something that people like who's met me in person after seeing me online is that I'm not that different. I'm very outgoing and I'm very friendly. Like, if you stop me, I will talk to you. If you, even if I don't know you, even if I've never heard of you, I will talk to you. But I was trying to talk to this person, and then when we finally got to talking, they were like, yeah, I was just worried that you were gonna be like maybe like not very nice, and maybe you'll be stuck up. And I'm like, oh no, this is what I feared.
But
And
you weren't.
yeah, and so I really don't think I really don't think I'm that intimidating, and I really don't think I look stuck up, but I know I have a resting bitch face, but I try to smile most of the time and like greet people. But I think it was that, like, you know, that being perceived as like a person who is not genuine. And the questions that I've gotten in the past where people have asked me, like, do you really enjoy this? Like, do you really enjoy just doing these like silly things, right? Like, remember we had that conversation? And
That
so I
guy was
think,
like, "Do you actually enjoy doing drills?" I was like, "Yeah,
yeah,
I
yeah, I fucking love drills. And so I had all of those expectations. And then when those expectations were not met during SoCal Sword Fight, even though even though I fought well and people told me I fought well and I looked well out there, it still didn't feel like I should have kept going. And that's why I skipped the Rose and Thorns tournament. And I just went to LA and just visited my friends and just like hung out with like HEMA people, which by the way will be out at some point. I've recorded a bunch of stuff, but coming back from that, I learned a lot of lessons and everything that we've talked about before SoCal Sword Fight and after SoCal Sword Fight, I made sure that I at least like remembered the most important ones and that, you know, I was there to have fun. And that once I get to that point where I don't think I could keep going, that it's okay. And there's no shame in saying, get myself out of this situation. I gotta push that eject button. And I did. And I don't regret it. And I had a lot of fun regardless. And I came back home actually excited about swords again. Because I've told people like, yeah, because I've told people like I have not done any HEMA-ish things in 2 months leading up to CombatCon because I had spiraled into a pretty deep depression. And there were like there were different multiple factors that that contributed to that. And I almost didn't come. I almost skipped so I almost skipped CombatCon this year, and I'm glad I didn't because I have renewed that that excitement again. And it's definitely a step up from my last experience at my last tournament. So I think, you know, the things that I've tried this time, a lot of it worked and it was in a positive way and the mindset as well. And I really made sure that like I was consciously trying these things and not letting the stress and the nervousness get the
Take
best
over,
of me. Yeah, because that was the biggest thing that like really like killed my confidence at SoCal Sword Fight was that I was just nervous. And given that I didn't know what I, you know, what to do, and I didn't really have any tournament prep, it was definitely going in blind. And so yeah, this time around, I really had a lot of fun. It was a lot less stressful for some reason, even though I worked a lot. I don't feel emotionally, mentally drained like I did the first time. So, yeah,
I mean, you were physically tired.
I am,
Me.
but I am physically tired. There were a lot of activities that happened over the weekend. And but mentally though, I don't feel like I was wrecked because again, like I was wrecked coming back from SoCal. And I don't feel that way. I don't feel that way this time around. So I'm really happy with that. So yeah,
I
it
mean,
was a great
you
experience.
should be leaving an event raring to go to the ready to go to the next
The
one.
next one. Yeah, and that's how I left. I was really excited. I met so many people and I had some super fun matches. Even in longsword, there was this point and
Even
I don't
in
know if
longsword.
even in longsword, even in longsword, there was this I fought a tiny girl and she beat my ass because I have no idea how to fight tiny people. But I loved our exchange because and I hope that somebody caught a video of it. Because at one point, while we were on each side of the ring and we were waiting for the judge to tell us to start fighting, she started kind of dancing. And so I started like twerking on my side. And then her coach started dancing. And then my corner started dancing. And we were all just like dancing. And then everybody was like laughing. And like, I was like, what's going on? So I tried to make the best out of it this time and tried to not like take things like too seriously, and
Get
I feel
stuck
like
in your
that def
head.
yeah, and that definitely the mindset thing definitely helped a lot. So yeah, it was
Dancing
great.
helps.
It really does. I twerked so much. I did so many twerking in public over the weekend. I have no shame.
I've seen the reel of you in the armor
In the
twerking.
arm. It was surprisingly easy to twerk in armor versus twerking in HEMA gear.
Oh, really? That's a testament to the maneuverability.
Exactly.
So, you left feeling positive, compared to the time before where you felt like it had taken a lot out of you, you felt very drained by it. You left, I mean, you're obviously physically tired, but emotionally and emotionally and mentally, what's the word?
I feel
energized.
Refreshed. I'm energized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you really
absolutely
inspired. Even
I am. I saw so much good fencing over the weekend as well, and it was just so inspiring to just like get to meet all of these people and make friends with them, and they're just. You're just like, yes, friendship. So
I'll just have a quick sort of dip into things from my end of the world. Mm-hmm. So I've been up to recently. So I haven't been to an event, a tournament, since I think it was October last year, where I did my last stint as a referee and line judge. That's not true. My last tournament was my own event, By the Sword.
Yeah.
Which was a lovely event, a lovely tournament. I'm not saying it just because it's mine, but in terms of tournament atmosphere, it's one of the nicest ones that I've experienced. And my hat goes off to Alex Austin.
Yes.
Who was the tournament manager. I said, can you be a tournament manager for me? Because I don't want to do it. I need someone to run it. And she was like, yeah, sure. She's brilliant. She's always been like very keen on organizing tournaments as well as taking part in them. And she put the rota together. So she sorted out all the staffing and she made sure I didn't do any judging.
So I love that.
She made me only table and only, so only doing the scoreboards or only doing the laptop, so I didn't have to do any judging or refereeing. So
right.
Enjoy my final
year
tournament. Yeah. So that's sort of like where I was in terms of other events that I've been to. I taught a seminar at an archaeological site.
I saw that.
Yeah, I got an invitation months back from a lovely guy called Andy, who's the manager. I think he runs the. It's called the Ancient Technology Centre down in the southwest of the UK, of England, in Dorset. And basically they have a bunch of houses, like Saxon, Viking, ancient, hence the ancient technology, that you can have weddings in and stay. Like all the other folks who went to the seminar, there were 10 of them, or just under. They all slept in the Viking longhouse.
That's cool.
I took an Airbnb because I wanted showers and sheets. But hats off to them. They said it was really cozy and it was really fun. And that was a nice... Thank you, baby. My kids just brought me another car. Bless them. so that was a really nice event to go to. Went to that with my partner. Mm-hmm. And he was really supportive. And we ran 2 days of workshops for a very small group of people who are lovely. The brief I was given was basically give people an introduction to HEMA,
right?
And I couldn't have asked for a more amazing venue because we're in this massive roundhouse, which is like, it's like an
I saw it. It was so sick. You guys were doing sword and buckler in that video.
We did sword and dagger. So the venue, the building was like something out of Game of Thrones. Like,
it's true. It really did. I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. Yeah.
I was imagine eating a horse's heart. So we had a great time, and it was one of the hottest weekends as well. So that house was very appropriate for getting out of heat. And then last weekend I was supposed to teach another much shorter seminar in the Midlands at something called the Midlands Muster, which is run by a lovely guy called Richard Hughes, who is enormous and very loud and very lovely. He's been on the podcast. He's like 7 foot something, I think, or maybe just under. And I was supposed to be teaching there this weekend, and my car died en route.
Oh
And so,
no.
yeah, sat by the
That's
side of the
the worst.
motorway, sat on the side of the motorway for 2 hours, and had to get recovered all the way home and didn't make it. So I was very sad about that.
That's rough.
But, you know, I haven't done any tournaments. I have, yeah, been teaching, and I've been teaching in my school. I'm having, as I mentioned earlier, some time off from teaching in my school. What we have been doing is running a study group, which is what one of my students suggested. And I literally just brought like all the books that I could find into the hall, put them on a table, and was like, right, pick one, let's do some stuff. And like people can just basically grab a book, find something that interests them, and go, oh, I want to do that. And I'll go, yeah, right, sure, I'll
I love
help you.
that. That sounds so much fun.
It is fun. It's like little study buddies together. So we were doing, and what it's done for me is I really want to learn small sword properly.
Yes, girl, get in that shit.
So yeah, I've been studying Angelo, and at the
Yes,
weekend I
girl.
was looking at that with Nick Thomas, who
Come
runs.
to the ribbons and lace aside.
I mean, I've dabbled in small sword for years, and I've just thought of it as mini rapier. But I think I really should learn it properly and do it
It's
by the
so much
book.
fun. It's so
Yeah.
much fun. It's such a simple system, but it's so much fun.
I realised something about you, actually. It was only from one of your TikToks, is that you said, I own long swords, but I love small swords. So, like,
I
it's a very familiar career path in HEMA. People
Is
come
it?
for the, yes, they come for the long swords, they stay for the small sword.
Yeah, and you know, I was it what's interesting about that is that I was talking to someone yesterday. It was Matthew Stinson from Bold City Longsword, and they were talking about hosting a Give a Girl a Sword event, and I was chatting with them about it, and I was like, you know, I definitely would suggest like a different weapon, like you know, a small sword maybe, because you know, in my experience, it's a very intense weapon to learn for the first time. And he was like, no, but like they want, like women come and see the big swords and they want that. And I was like, I was just like that. And then I realized how intense it is and you know how hard it is to just get into like the long sword thing, at
You
least
need
for
to
me, in
get
my
physically
experience.
good before you can. You need to like physically condition yourself to a
Yeah,
degree. You can't just pick it
exactly.
up and be good with it. Unlike small sword, which is just you can pick it up and do it straight
Yeah,
away. You don't have to have
yeah.
this period of getting, you know, shoulder upper body strength and upper body mobility, and you know, you're not going to risk injuring yourself so much either.
Exactly. You're not like, there's literally like no way, unless like the blade breaks and you get stabbed, right? But other than that, like, there's really like very little, like, you know, stake, like for, you know, physically. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting when he said that, because I'm like, you know what? I remember myself just like wanting all of the long swords because they're big and that's what I saw on TV and they're really cool looking. And then I realized that in terms of like learning the martial art, it's just that's gonna be like a longer path for me just because of my accessibility issues. And so, yeah, like I thought that was really interesting that you brought that up because I had a similar conversation with some other person about that.
I've only met one club that does everything that every other club does in reverse. So there's this guy in Serbia who I interviewed about a year ago, just under a year ago. He starts all his students with small sword. So it goes, he does small sword, then Desak, then saber, then side sword, then long sword, which is kind of almost the path that I followed. Which I started with small side sword, then rapier, and then small sword, and then long sword. But I think to give people a sense of satisfaction. Okay, you can give them boffers, because boffers yeah. are light.
Yeah.
And sword shaped, and you don't need loads of gear, and you don't need really huge amounts of strength.
Yeah.
But small sword is a really good way to go when you're starting out, because it teaches you timing, measure, mm-hmm. footwork, all that stuff yeah. that is important yeah. for every sword.
And it's really easy to get the gear for it, and
yeah,
the
foil budget.
Yeah, and foils are really cheap, so mm-hmm. it's definitely like a good way to start off. And yeah, I feel like I'm, you know, as the months progress, I'm looking at what I want to do, and it's looking like it's going to be like rapier next for me. But I know, girl, I better pay you for some lessons. But but yeah, it's looking like that, because I still love doing longsword. Like, longsword's so much fun, and everybody's doing longsword. There's always going to be someone who's going to be like, yeah, I'll fight longsword with you, right? Yeah. So it's definitely something that I don't want to quit yet, but it is also still the source of all of my frustration and heartbreak yeah. and HEMA. Yeah. And I don't want to keep just pursuing that to the point where I just, there will be times where I'm like, I just want to fucking quit this shit. Like, what the fuck? Like, why do I keep trying to make this shit work that won't work for me back? You know? So I'm trying to like look at different ways to kind of like still have the longsword on the side, but also like have something that sustains me so that I don't leave the community, because I'm so fucking frustrated.
I think you're describing polyamory.
Oh no!
Seriously though, like I was saying to the folks at the seminar I did, that what happens to people when they start HEMA is they'll start in a particular weapon, say your longsword, it's usually longsword.
Yeah.
And then what happens is you identify with that weapon and you go, I am a longsworder. This is what I do. I do yeah. other stuff, but I am a longsworder. And that's kind of like not in the spirit of fencing.
Yeah.
Because sword play is not longsword play. It's
exactly
all the weapons. Like, if you learn yeah. fiore, mm-hmm. for example, if you're a fiorist,
mm-hmm.
you should know grappling, dagger,
right,
sword in one hand, sword in two hands, spear, horseback, mm-hmm. all the rest of it. It's a system.
Yes.
If you
yes.
do bolognese fencing, you should know all of the weapons. If you do Maya, you should know all of the weapons that Maya does, not just
right.
the longsword. It's
right. Right.
It's an entire system. So like getting really hung up on, I have to be really good at longsword is...
Yeah.
No, you don't. You
yeah,
know,
exactly.
The saying, jack of all trades, master of none.
Of none.
Jack of all trades is better than master of... What was it?
Of none.
Of one.
Yeah, yeah. Something like
better,
that.
It's better to have a good spread than just
yeah.
have all your eggs in one basket and be good
yeah.
really good at one thing, because
yeah.
learning other weapons informs your understanding for the other weapon that you're training.
No, I definitely agree, and I'm very thankful to Alina Boyden that she introduced small sword. Mm-hmm. I've been trying this long sword for what, 2 years now,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's my progress has been like it's just inching along. And so I'm happy that I got into small sword, because you're right, like, you know, there are connections to that, and now I'm looking at like other weapons that I can train in that's not long, you know, transfer and, you know, crossover and all that, but still like sword play, right? Like I'm still informing myself and having fun and not stuck into one thing that I desperately want to work for me. Because I love longsword. Like, you know,
yeah,
people
love,
like...
love longsword.
Yeah, people are starting to associate me with smallsword, and that's great. But, like, I also love longsword. Like, I you know, that's where I started. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's just not working out for me. But
I mean, I think
it's okay.
I think a lot of the pressure comes from the fact that everybody does it.
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
And the people who do it like are really good at it, so it feels like I've got to be really good because they're really good.
Yeah,
And I've,
yeah.
for me, I'm okay at Longsword. I'm not great, but I'm not emotionally invested in it, so I'm fine with that. I'm not like,
Yeah.
I'm so shit at Longsword, why
Yeah.
can't I get good at it? I'm not that, I don't really care about it that much. It's just, you know, it's just a side bitch for me. It's just a thing.
I think though I am a lot less emotionally invested in Longsword now
Yeah.
because I am enjoying other things because I have tried other things and will continue to try other things. And it's not like I'm not gonna come back to it, but like I'm not so what do you call that? I'm just not concentrating in it so much. I'm not obsessing over it so much that it's affecting my own mental. Why am I not good at this? I've been trying so hard. So that side of myself that wanted to get good, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but like I kind of shed that part of me that expects me to like get better. And I think I'm better off having that kind of mindset these days,
Sometimes
so.
you find that you really like, this has happened to me, like you invest in something, invest in something, and then you start to realize it's not going how you wanted it to, it's not working out, so you go, right, I'm gonna just take a break and study something else or get into something else. Then when you come back to that thing, you're ready for it. So, like, you know, just keep on keeping on sometimes isn't the right thing to do. Sometimes you do need to just take a break from it and then look at it with a new perspective.
Oh yeah. I definitely agree. And I learned a lot of new things from long sorting with other people over at Combat Con. Got a lot of new tips. So I have a lot of new things that I'm excited about to try in my own longsword fencing. So yeah, it's good. I think I'm in a better headspace when it comes to what I want out of my time doing HEMA. It took a little while and a lot of tears, but I think I've gotten to a point where I am pretty secure and have a little bit of a vision of where my path is going to be and what it's going to be like. So.
Another sort of thing I'm going to say in favor of the small sword is it is a great leveler in terms of competition. Like I think
Oh, girl.
you came fifth, right, in the
Yes.
thing,
Yeah.
and it was mixed.
It was mixed. I was the only girl who made it out of the pools.
Oh.
And the guy that beat me during Elims is this beast of a fencer who is tall and lanky and have just the craziest reach, and he barely beat me. So much so that after it was a really fun match. After our match, he came up to me and he's like, "Jonna, you could have beat me." Because what I did is, and this is something that I've figured out as like a leveler to like close that distance when somebody has a really long reach is do all of the hand parries because I can
All the
get in
time.
there. So I've been so this is the first tournament that I actually have implemented hand parries and succeeded because I wasn't doing any of that at Soka. I was afraid to do it. I did like maybe once or twice, but I don't remember like exactly. Yeah, so this time I was like prepared and I was like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to succeed and I'm going to close that distance. So when I fought in the Elims, I only had one Elims match. He was like, you could have beat me if you didn't grab the sword and just pushed it out of the way because I got him. I was just a beat too late, but it was such a fun. And he was like, you know, he even thanked me like, hey, thanks for the really, you know, fun match. And I was like, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And again, I didn't really expect to get that far. I was kind of bummed out. I'm like, I was like, I was ready to go to a first aid class after the pools. And they were like, Jonna the Tahan, you're in the top eight. And I was like, God damn it. I'm gonna miss my first aid class. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I think it was really cool because a lot of people who were seeing me fight for the first time were super excited, and they were like, "Whoa, I didn't know you could do that." And I'm like, "I didn't know I could do that too." So yay. So,
That's what happens when you take the expectations away.
yeah, I really did, because I was just like, I just gonna power through this, because
I'm
again,
gonna
like,
have
I was
fun.
just, it was Sunday, yeah, I was tired, I almost dropped out. I'm just like, oh my God, like, I got into the tournament, I was outside of the tournament area, and the monster was there, and I was just like trying to stretch, and we were just, and then I just got to the point where I'm like, I wouldn't want to do this anymore. I just started talking to him, and then I just went and did the tournament. So yeah, it was a really good experience, and a lot of people had fun watching it, because it's a small sport, is really fun to watch. Like, I noticed that there are some people that don't take it seriously. Like, they think it's a silly weapon system, and then you watch people do it, you try it, and then you realize that it actually takes a lot more footwork, a lot more strength, like, a lot more, like, faster reaction time to actually be decent at it. So a lot of people had fun watching the tournament. It was like, a smaller one, but yeah, it was a really good experience overall, and I met new friends through it.
It's taken literally years. I mean, I've been in HEMA 12 years, and it's taken this long for small sword to be finally acceptable. It's still
I know.
like a little bit of like a little bit of ridicule, like, oh, it's not a proper sword kind of thing. It's like, have you seen an actual small sword? They're just
Exactly.
shanks,
Exactly.
just
It
massive
is.
spikes for sticking
Exactly.
through people. They're not
Yeah.
nice.
People think that it's because all they see are the foils, right?
Yeah,
The super bendy
the
ones. I'm like,
trainer.
no,
Yeah.
those are the trainers. Because if you use the actual ones, you'll die. Like, you'll
Yeah.
get injured.
It's like that sword on the wall behind you. I know this is a recording, but when you compare a long sword to a feather, one is dead, way more deadlier than the other. They're different things. We're an hour in, and I
Yes.
said before we when we were planning this podcast that we would do our big announcement at the
Yes.
beginning, but we forgot. I forgot. So big announcement time. Big announcement time. Swords and Mental Health is changing hands. The Franna show is going to continue, but I'm no
Yes.
longer the hostess. Who's going to be the hostess, Jana?
It's me. I'm gonna be the new host.
So, yeah, this is something that we've decided. Like, we've been talking about this on and off for a few months now. Like, the podcast will continue. By the Sword, the
Yes.
podcast will continue, but the Swords and Mental Health format, talking about mental health and swords and how things affect us and stuff, is something that you have agreed to take on because of the feedback that you've been getting from all the lovely HEMA folks out there. And I just felt like the time was right for me to hand it over. It's been great, and I'll be very honored to come on your show, as it will be from now on.
We will still have the Franna show,
Yeah, we'll
worry
still have to
not.
do the Fran show now and again, but so just to give the listeners an idea of how this all came about, By the Sword started out as an event for women and non-binary folks. Then this little disease called coronavirus happened in early 2020, and the event couldn't happen. So I, as the organizer, was left with, what do I do? How do I continue? How do I keep the momentum going? So, like everyone else during the pandemic, I decided to start a podcast, and I took all of my, I think I had 11 folks, women and non-binary people, who were scheduled to be the instructors at By the Sword 2020, and I interviewed each of them over several weeks, and it went well. And I did it as a live each time, so I did it live on Instagram, and then I ran out of my 11 people, so I thought, I'll interview. The pandemic was still going, 11 weeks in, it was still there. It's like, well, how much longer is this going to go on? So the instructors from the previous years and the year before that, and so on and so forth. And then I just started getting people saying, oh, you should interview this person. So my whole the whole idea behind the podcast at that point in time was to showcase women in HEMA who teach, or women in HEMA who compete, because I don't think as a community we're very good at showing that.
It's true.
I was a co-founder of Esfinges back in 2012, mm-hmm. With Mariana Lopez, and we made a real effort to try and expose more of women in martial in the historical European martial arts.
Yeah.
We both came from a sort of point of view that it's all guys, like women. I think women make up a fifth of the HEMA population, something like that. It's just my estimate. But I just thought I wanted to create a platform to show women who teach HEMA, because whenever you go to an event, it's usually all guys teaching. Or if you go to a tournament, it's all guys competing, and you don't see women. You don't see many women taking part. So that's how it started. And then I think I interviewed in total something like 60 women instructors.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, well, who do I interview now? Because the pandemic was still going. And the podcast had sort of gained momentum, and it wasn't even a podcast then; it was just a live stream.
Right.
Then I had all these interviews in the can, so I started releasing them as podcasts on the podcasting app called Anchor, which I'm using at the moment. And then we met, didn't we, during this time?
Yes, we did.
Like a lot of people, we formed friendship during the time of the pandemic. We found that we had loads in common.
So much.
It's spooky.
It's ridiculous. Just like thinking back to our first conversations, I get goosebumps. I'm like, this, like, Fran is me in the future.
Yeah.
This is who I'm going to be when I'm her age.
Oh my God.
We look like we're sisters. So
I did feel like Hiro Nakamura, like, I'm you from the future.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, the podcast started out as just interviews, but then we had, we established a friendship online. We still haven't met in real life. We will one day meet in real life.
Yeah, I should start a GoFundMe. Yeah. Reunite Donna and Fran.
But we had, this very close, we still do have a very close bond, and we had loads of conversations. We were like, our conversations should be recorded. They should be a podcast. Because, we're going through some stuff. We both mm-hmm. do swords, and there's a lot of kind of crossover there. There's a lot of overlap between, your struggles with mental health or your life, work-life balance mm-hmm. or whatever. And then there's your struggles in training, and there's a lot of correlation there, and there's a lot of, things to sort of, I think a lot of people can relate to. And then we ended up doing our first ever episode, and we just called it Swords and Mental Health, which seems like an incongruous combination of things.
It really was. People loved it.
People liked it, so we kept doing it.
Yeah.
And that's how it started. And at this point now, we've had lots of lovely people on the show.
Mm-hmm,
Kimmy's been a regular guest, who was wonderful.
Yes, we've
had a lot of interesting topics, like
mm-hmm.
Hitting really hard.
Yep.
Gender.
Mm-hmm.
Non-binary folks in HEMA.
Mm-hmm.
Trans folks in HEMA. And, just everyday, day-to-day stuff, dealing with depression, anxiety, neurodiversity, all kinds of things that can affect us. Being a parent, struggling to make it fit around your life.
Exactly.
And more
specifically, being a mother and getting into the sport.
Yeah, all the barriers. All the struggles to do the sport. If you're a parent, particularly a single parent, that's how it was a diversion from the normal format of the show, which was just like, get a person on the show, talk to them about their HEMA career,
mm-hmm.
And that's fine, and people want to know more about other fencers and instructors, but this type of interview, this type of recording, sorry, was different because we were talking about stuff that people probably don't talk about.
Yep, exactly.
Except maybe with their closest friends.
Mm-hmm. And which is exactly what we were doing. You know, we were talking in a way that I would talk to you as someone that I trust, that I'm close to. And I think that that's what resonated the most with a lot of people is that we were not afraid to be those people that bring this up in public or, you know, in a more accessible setting. Because they are, talking about mental health, there's so much stigma that it's really hard for a lot of people. And it does take a lot of courage because, you know, for the longest time, I was ashamed to say that I was struggling at all just because of expectations and stuff. And, you know, after meeting you and meeting Kimmy and all of our conversations that were not recorded and recorded, I definitely have, you know, grown a lot in a good way in the community. You know, I'm glad that we, like, us collectively in the podcast itself is kind of doing that for people. Like, maybe they don't have that kind of person to talk to, right? And they listen to the podcast and be like, okay, I don't feel alone, right? Like, I don't feel like I am a fluke that I feel this way. I don't feel like my feelings are not valid anymore because I hear other people talking about this. Especially people who are fairly new. And that's why I think our dynamic was so good. I was brand new and you have so much experience that I'm coming to you with all of these problems, all of these issues, all of these heartaches, right? And you're just like, it's okay, baby, I've been here. I'm going to tell you it's going to be all right. And these are the things that you can do, you know?
I've got you.
Exactly, exactly. And that's, also, I think that's what's great about it.
Also, it's kind of like, at my work, we have this thing called reverse mentoring, where someone, you know, the person who'd normally be the mentee gives the experienced person feedback. And
yeah.
There's a lot, so that they get a more realistic view of what's going on.
Yeah.
So for me, connecting with you over all these issues, you being very new to the scene, gave me, like, it transported me back to when I was new. It showed me how much things have changed. And it showed me how things can be better because, you know, when you take on a new student, there's a natural student-teacher dynamic going on there. And someone, if you're if you're in that dynamic, if you're the student, you're going to be deferential to your instructor all the time.
Right.
Whereas we don't have that. We're pals.
Yeah.
And you can be frank with me and you can be honest and I'll be like,
yeah,
God, I've never thought about it that way before.
Yeah.
I think that's why it benefits not only the beginners, like you say, people who are new to this and struggling with you know, conceptualizing stuff or struggling in everyday life with stuff, but also the instructors get a whole new idea about stuff because they only get the feedback they get from the new people is what the new people think they want to hear, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a conscious thing either. I think, you know, when you're a student, you want to impress your instructor, you want to get in their good books or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just want them to treat you well, but if because we're pals, it's different. We can just lay it all out on the table and talk about stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But, so,
well,
so
before we
mental health, go, sorry.
Yeah. Swords and Mental Health is now my deal. And before I'm officially taking the mantle into my tiny HEMA hands, I just want to say, and I've said this to you before, and I'm going to try to say this again without crying.
Oh my God.
When we met, I was just a lost, just, like, HEMA fencer who just, like, got into this, didn't know what she was doing. And you gave your time to me. and you shared your platform with me. And it's been such an honor to have all of the stuff that we've put out and have people like get so much from that, from everything that we've talked about and all of the advice that you've given me. And, you know, if it weren't for you, people would not have heard my voice. And I didn't really think that my voice mattered, but you helped it matter. You made sure that, like, someone like me, because I'm not unique. There are so many people in HEMA like me. And you gave us that voice by giving me your platform. And I'm so fucking grateful that I met you and all of this great stuff. And that we are going to continue doing this. Okay, I cried again. Okay, but it's okay. And yeah, I love you so much. And I'm just so happy and grateful that we've become friends and we've done so much in such a short time.
We really have.
And I'm so proud of the work that we've done together. So thank you.
I'm honored to be your friend and to know you and to know that the podcast is in excellent hands.
And you know, I'm always going to bug you for advice.
of course. And when you say that you're not unique, you fucking are. I don't know anyone who has elevated HEMA butts more than you.
It's my brand.
You know, you make HEMA fun, you make it accessible, you make people talk about the stuff that they are probably ignoring or they mm-hmm. don't realize that they should talk about. You know, I'm using my platform, but you're the person who's like pushed for accessibility and diversity and, you know, all these things that I truly believe in, but you're the person who's given me that, you know, that inspiration and that energy to keep going because, you know, I'm an old HEMA-ist and I've been doing this a long time. But you do, you know, when I started doing this, I met a few instructors and I was like, oh my God, that's going to be me. And they were so bitter. They were so jaded. You know, I've quit tournaments and I've quit organizing, but that's just because I'm done with it. I'm not because I'm bitter or I think they're bad. It's just not a jam anymore, you know?
Yeah.
But the energy and the enthusiasm and the passion that you put into this sport, this art, this hobby, this lifestyle mm-hmm. is really inspiring. And it's, you know, we keep each other going. That's how we do.
Yeah.
So now that you're in charge of Swords and Mental Health, what changes are you going to make? What direction are you going to take it?
So I have done a little bit of thinking, and I definitely want to keep the format that we have now, but I do want to invite more diverse people. I've met a lot of people in the past year, and there are definitely people that I want to explore the angle of we have swords, right? We love the sword aspect, and we'll talk about, you know, the mental health aspect, but I also want to know what other people are doing aside from swords, because I know some people have other interesting hobbies. So kind of like introduce a little bit more diversity, because I feel like some people get stuck into having swords as their only like identity, and I've always resisted that because I have like a ton of fucking hobbies. And then I meet people who are doing the same thing, and you know, they're just as passionate as swords as they are with, in my case, crochet. Mm-hmm. And you know, kind of tying all of that together, there are some similarities to the type of like effect that it has to their life, to their mental health, to their emotional internal lives. So that's kind of where I'm at right kind of playing with those ideas. And I would like to introduce more people and introduce like newer fencers as well, which I think is, you know, something that would be pretty exciting. Like, you know, we have an up and coming person right here, and, you know, mm-hmm. you gotta get to know them and stuff. And, you know, I also have a lot of people that I've talked to back in 2020 and 2021 who are, you know, before forever, but they think that our podcast is really interesting, and they think that the stuff that I say as a new student, it, you know, makes sense. So kind of gonna get there too. But for the most part, I love the format that we've had, and I'm, for the most part, I will definitely stick with that, but with a little bit of razzle dazzle here and there. So
a little bit of razzle dazzle. I mean, I'm still going to continue the By the Sword podcast.
Yes.
But there's the mental health banner is going to be the thing that you take on, Jonna.
Putting the crown on. So much responsibility.
And I'm here if you need support. So.
Of course.
We'll help each other out like we always do.
Yes. That's why I wasn't afraid to take it.
Yeah.
Because I knew you were going to be there.
I'm right here. Yelling yeah. at you from the corner. You got this!
You got this! You can keep going!
Oh, on that note, I think it's a good place to end. So,
yes,
Jonna, thank you so much for being my partner all this way. And,
it's been a pleasure. It has been so much fun.
Now
and this won't be the end. Now
that's
I do.
Not the end.
This is not the
yeah,
end.
You've got the wheel.
Yeah, you just got the wheel now.
This is like Thelma and Louise with a yeah. happy ending.
Yeah, without having to go over the cliff.
Okay, take care, lovey.
Take care. Bye bye.
I love you.
I love you too.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform, or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews, or visit bytheSword.net to learn about our events, or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword. Thank you.